laws. When the Nazis did their Nuremberg racial laws, they specifically cited these U.S. measures as a large part of their inspiration.
Immigration law of 1924.
And the broader eugenics movement. I did a chapter on this in a report I did years ago for Nader on the Educational Testing Service.
Called The Reign of ETS, the corporation that
makes up minds. And that's what Sessions and Miller and Trump are proposing again. But the key is, as Miller was talking about the other day, he was saying, oh, this will be immigration based on merit. That's exactly what they were saying in 1924, because the basic claim is Aryan whites have more merit.
And Steve Miller
bogus then, bogus now.
Now Steve Miller is being considered, Stephen Miller, to be the communications chief.
He does communicate their message in a sense.
Well, we want to thank you very much, Alan Nairn, for spending this hour with us. Alan Nairn, award-winning investigative journalist and activist. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Malkoff, John Hamilton, Ravi Karan, Hani Massoud, Tarina Nadura. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now! Thanks for joining us.
KBOO hosts a monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater called KBOO at the Clinton. This month we'll screen the film Keep the Hives Alive on Thursday, August 10th at 7 p.m. Bees and other pollinators are declining at an alarming rate. An overwhelming number of scientific studies link these population declines to pesticide use. Keep the Hives Alive is a documentary film that shows the use of toxic pesticides are having far-reaching impacts on a wide range of environments, including beehives. Again, that's a film screening at the documentary Keep the Hives Alive, Thursday, August 10th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at the KBOO.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The events committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is KBOO Portland.
Nature's weak, telling you something's wrong. It's nature's weak, telling you in a song. It's nature's weak.
And good morning. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. And that was a Spirit, the 12 Dream, Nature's Way, from the 12 Dreams of Dr. Sardonicus. And I've got the squeaky chair again this morning. I may have to change it. I know that's kind of irritating enough to there sure is to me. Anyway, I'm Paul Roland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. Nature's way of telling us something's wrong. This heat wave is something that those smoke from those fires. Can you see it? Can you feel it? I feel bad for people who are having respiratory issues with this smoke. I felt a little bit myself when it was really intense. I can only imagine that people who have those kind of difficulties in general are suffering. And I do hope we all find some relief here from this, because if this is the new normal, it's not good. And the Greenland fires are burning in Greenland. Can you imagine? Things are really out of whack here. I don't want to be like my fellow co-host Joe Uris on his show yesterday. I mean, it was a fine show, but he was basically appealing to people to convince him that things aren't as dire as they actually are. I'm not sure that's what I'm looking for. I'm not sure what I am looking for. My regular co-host of the second Wednesday of the month, Jacqueline Keeler, isn't able to come on this morning. She is writing a book. I don't know if she wants to even say what it's about. I think it's something about the Malheur occupation and other things. So that's something to look forward to. She's always got a really compelling and interesting perspective on things. She did some programs with me earlier about that issue and many others besides. So we'll hopefully have her back on in the next couple weeks. We'll see. Next week, I am going to have Richard Heinberg. So that's something to look forward to. He's with the Post Carbon Institute. He's a senior fellow at the Post Carbon Institute and is regarded as one of the world's foremost advocates for a shift away from our current reliance on fossil fuels. He has authored many essays and articles that have appeared in such places as Nature, Reuters, Wall Street Journal, The American Prospect, The Sun, and on websites such as Alternet, Project Censored, Counterpunch. Some of his books include, most recently, last year, Our Renewable Future, Laying the Path for 100% Clean Energy. Then Afterburn in 2015, Snake Oil in 2013, The End of Growth, August 2011, The Post-Carbon Reader, 2010, Blackout, Coal, Climate, and the Last Energy Crisis, 2009, Peak Everything, Waking Up to the Century of Declines, 2007, and didn't start out. He wrote a book called The Party's Over, Oil War and the Fate of Industrial Societies in 2003. He actually wrote a book before that, which is not on here. Interestingly enough, I hope he'll be interested in talking about it. It's A New Covenant with Nature, which was the first book I read of his. Anyway, I'm really looking forward to talking to Richard Heinberg next Wednesday. I hope you are too. So this week, I am going to talk with you all, and I hope you want to talk with me, because I don't really have that much to talk about with for the next 50 minutes all by myself. So the number to call in is 503-231-8187. I guess I kind of will make it a sort of general what you want to talk about. I haven't done that in a while. But I was really struck by what Alan Nairn was just saying on Democracy Now! I assume there's a number of you who we're listening to Democracy Now! Before this. He was on for the entire hour. I always get a lot out of Alan Nairn. He's one of the, I don't know, to me, one of the more reasonable, knowledgeable perspectives, kind of the big picture. He's talking about this rightist revolution. I just think we have a tendency to be distracted in general. It's hard to keep, you know, like three-card money, trying hard to keep an eye on the, you know, what's really moving. Or not so much three-card money, you know, but those three cups with the something underneath it, keep an eye on where it is. Powers that be do a real good job at distracting us, and we certainly distract ourselves all too easily. Liberals looking to authoritarian institutions to save us. That quote stood out. The fact that there's military people all over the talk shows, the fact that there is so many generals in Trump's cabinet. We're caught between the institutions that I wouldn't say we've created, but that have been created systemically by economic, personal, political, social power through this long historical process. And it's at a very nasty point, considering the fact that the other system that we live in, the natural system, which is, of course, telling us that things are really off kilter, is withering under the assault, the continued cumulative assault of technological society and overpopulation and overweening power and intervention into natural systems. It is at the point of breaking apart, seemingly. So we're caught in between these two systems, one created by this human historical process, one under assault by that same human historical process, and we're continually fragmented by the massification and alienation instilled by this cultural process that we're enmeshed in, which makes it even more difficult to change the circumstances that are indeed so dire. So let's go to our first caller. I believe it's Court, so I think was trying to call in last week and didn't get on. Go ahead. Now you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate your show. Lots of good information and ideas. And I was listening to the guy's show yesterday and tried to call in but couldn't, got disconnected. But I personally feel, and it's taken me a long time to get this way, that everything's fine, like, on the planet or the realm or whatever one believes we're actually living on. And what leads me to believe that is, like, I recently personally changed a bunch of things in my personal life, such as my diet, stopped eating meat, stopped intaking caffeine, and going on that a couple months now, it, like, my perception of my own feelings, like, have changed, and of the reality, like, around me, and especially, like, my ego, the idea that, like, I'm so important, and that, like, you know, this planet's my planet, that word my or ours, and it just, like, raised, like, a huge, like, I don't know, like, weight off of my chest. And, like, with the heat wave, or, you know, I'm going to put air quotes around that because it doesn't honestly feel that hot to me. To, like, just enjoy it. Like, to just, like, I don't know, going back to that ego thing, it's like, you know, I'm only on planet Earth for a limited engagement, in the grand scheme of how long it's been going on. And, you know, I'll look at the concrete which is that man-made system, that unnatural system that you were just mentioning. And I'll see how grass and, like, weeds will grow up through sidewalks and bust through it. And just the idea that, you know, we might, humans, you know, a certain group of humans might have, you know, tried to pour, you know, chemicals all over certain areas of land, but that unless those humans are there to constantly be reapplying those chemicals and building on top, like, that whatever's underneath will come back up. And
well, that's actually, there's actually some doubt about that. I mean I hear what you're saying, but there's some doubt about the ability of our ecosystem to actually maintain the resilience that they historically have, because apparently we're actually very fundamentally changing the underlying condition, you know, the not the underlying but the overarching conditions, namely the, you know, both the climatic and various aspects of the basic functioning of our Earth's ecosystem, such that it's, you know, maybe there's comfort in the fact that there's some life will go on. I don't find much comfort myself. I don't personally feel it's my planet, or that I don't necessarily feel an ego attachment. It's just distressing to me that we've played such an over large role in these ecosystems, which had, you know, maintained a really complex web of life that we're dramatically simplifying. I say we, meaning, you know, this sort of royal we. Actually, I think there's very specific elements to it. There's certain power blocks and certain social elites that have a more of an influence. But anyway, yeah, I'm not sure exactly. I tend to differ with the approach you're taking, I guess.
Yeah, it's just hard to, you know, especially comparing myself now to my younger days. I'm a, you know, technically a minority. You know, my dad, you know, Black African, and like just the bad feelings I used to feel growing up, especially in Oregon, with like just power, racial power and racism, and like just that, like, it sucks to live that way. It sucks to be a kid, like feeling like you're a loser, like you're no good, like, but it just seems like, you know, going back to what you were saying, how we've dramatically changed, you know, the underlying structure, but then again, we're only here for 70 years. Like, we, you know, maybe there's a long arc on that structure for it to restructure itself that we'll never even know. And so, like, I've taken my mind out of, like, the negative speculation, because I'm only here for this window of it. And, like, when I'm gone, like... time, the illusion that it is, will just keep rolling on, like, infinite, you know, as far as, like, I can surmise.
No, I hear that. I guess, you know, I don't know. It just seems that's sort of, I mean, so there's basically, you're saying there's nothing we can do to change the circumstances.
Now, that's a different question there, that what can we actually do? And, like, me personally, I'm a teacher. I work with elementary school students, and, you know, what I personally do every day with my class is make sure that it's the funnest, most active, engaging human experience like they can get, you know, during their young years. And with the hope that if I can inspire and turn on that inspiration of creator. I do a lot of arts integration with my teaching, pretty much all art, and then I'll pull in, you know, whatever the mandated curriculum is, just as like a tipping point, but like that we are in control. Like, we are in control. Like, but it starts literally with our own body and then goes out from there. And I guess when I was younger, my older approach, or my from a long time ago, was it's all about the outside world. It's all about everything out there, and that I'm powerless against it. And I've changed my thinking to, no, it's about the inner world, and it's about strengthening the inner world. It's about putting the right nutrients and minerals. The human body is made up of 102 minerals, and you got to replenish those minerals. You got to know the information of what it actually takes to maintain your life, and then do it, like then act on it. And so I believe that there's so much we can do, because getting into whole other theories here, like collective conscious, group conscious, it's like, just think it back to my classroom, dude, just keeping the ecosystem of my classroom and the consciousness of my students who are very young.
Well, no, that's right on. I certainly can't argue. I think it's wonderful working as you do with kids. It's a really wonderful opportunity both to keep in touch with that freshness of perspective, and also obviously you're engaging with them, sounds like, in a good way, that's, you know, positive experience for all concerned. So I can't argue with any of that, and I wouldn't, but we do have a couple other callers. I really appreciate your taking the time to explore those ideas with us.
Definitely. Keep doing what you're doing. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, that brings up a lot of stuff, but let's go to our next caller, Saul. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going? This is Paul.
Pretty good. How are you?
Good. Well, you know, I'm going off to my social work job. I got a couple of 19-year-olds who I dropped off in an alleyway in Milwaukee because they're homeless. So, you know, Paul Trudell makes sure that every day you wake up angry, and we need more angry people on Earth who are actually doing things. So today is, you know, the 72nd anniversary of the ultimate crime of a Democrat Truman dropping the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I think we have no right to be flower children in this country. I mean, I'm glad the caller before is an elementary teacher, but I was a teacher too, and the curriculum is dumbed downing. It's we know all this, Paul. I think we have a lot of work to do, and it may be several generations that have to sacrifice in a revolutionary zeal to try to bring some sanity to a world where, you know, the alternative Bernie Sanders, you know, advocates bombing Kosovo, as has the F-35 in its state. We have a lot of work to do, and we need to understand that there's a sixth mass extinction going on, and whatever balance that previous caller thinks he's getting with the diet and such, it doesn't solve 11 million people, children dying every year of diseases that could be treated, of sanctions against Korea that will probably spark a nuclear annihilation. We have work to do. Our children are hobbled. They're being taught the wrong stuff. They don't know how to engage. We have to be stealth about this. And I don't think, these Eugene, Oregon hippie kind of solutions are going to work. We have work, man. And I work every day to try to keep another kid off the streets, off drugs, and it's a drop in the bucket. But you know, you could be in Aleppo right now with the drone facing you down, or in Afghanistan. But you have to be angry and work through that anger to try to solve things, and to think about geological time, that the Earth is going to come back together. It's philosophical, Paul, at best, but it doesn't do diddly squat. Solve the daily problems that we have, and we have to solve those. And that's just my two cents. It's a big topic. Today is the 72nd anniversary of us killing 140,000 people. When I mean, it's a war crime. We'll never pay for it. And welcome to the La La Land. This is America that should probably go the way of the dodo quickly. We're the wrong species, the wrong people to control the planet.
All right. Well, thank you for that. The obviously the program I had mentioned where Alan Aaron was talking on Democracy Now! About Korea and other things on the 72nd anniversary of the dropping of the bomb. I mean, are they really gonna do this? is this just another distraction? You know, are they really going to beat the drumbeats of war? I mean, would they go to the extent of a nuclear conflagration, you know, to distract from whatever? I mean, Alan Nair's point is that the distraction is really from what the Trump regime is really actually accomplished. I mean, you know, the idea of Trump as this bumbling fool and cretin and all this. The reality is they are doing a lot of damage within all the various departments. They're rolling back whatever criticisms I've had of the regulatory state, and I still have all those criticisms. Some of the regulatory structure was a lot better than not having any at all. And I don't know, is this what it takes to, you know, to come to some sort of crisis point to, you know, to make the kind of changes necessary? I don't know. I see the irreversibility that Alan Nairn is talking about with species extinction, with abrupt climate change, with, you know, the rollback of whatever positive elements there have been in the, you know, the welfare state, in all that. I don't know. We'll see. Well, let's go to another caller. Mark, you're on the air. Hello?
Thanks for urging us to change our consciousness. Two resources seem very important to me. Joel Clement had an interview with Anna Coate, who's the author of Time on Our Side, from a new economics foundation in the UK. And she really presents a very convincing argument on a 30-hour work week. Her original idea was a 21-hour week, and she changed that to 30 hours to win more people over. So I recommend people check it out. You can download an introduction, a 30-page introduction. I also would recommend people studying Eric Fromm and his book, Escape from Freedom, in which he tries to analyze how people surrendered to the Grand Inquisitor, to Hitler, to the authoritarian. And I think his analysis is very appropriate for us. I think he saw the human as divided between the finite and the infinite, between clinging to tradition and yearning for change and innovation. Very convincing, very powerful writer. Also, there's a website, grin.com, which is actually a Munich publisher that has 188,000 books and 76,000 authors. They give you a reading sample for all of the e-books and dissertations. So a universe opens up. You do a search for economic ethics and you get 3,300 books. Or you can do a search for George Orwell or...
So many books, so little time.
Eric Fromm.
What, you know, the thing I've got is that you know, this whole issue of time, which I've been talking about a fair amount on this show. My sense is that, again, there's this onrushing, we're changing geological time itself. I mean, time rushes on, and there's always this illusion that we have enough time in our own lives to do whatever. You know, it's like the magical thinking or whatever, you know, that we have this, in the future, things will resolve ourselves. But in the meantime, we can just keep doing the same old things. But the reality is that geologic time, we're actually changing geological time, that the abruptness with which things are changing is actually so rapid that it's really boggling our very minds. I think people are really unable to come to terms with the rapidity. We're under this kind of sustained assault, and the assault is speeding up. And we're not really able to actually get into the present tense of what's going on, is my suspicion.
And the social state has mutated into the competition state, or the activating state. When was the 50th anniversary of Medicare celebrated. I guess I overslept, you know. To me, I'm in a state of shock, you know, that the third rails are suddenly in question. And in Social Security, which could be made solvent for 75 years by eliminating the $118,000 cap on the Social Security tax, that Social Security, Medicare, which is very efficient, you know, it has a 1 to 2% administrative cost, that Medicaid, that food stamps could be cut in the hundreds of billions of dollars, and that 60% of nursing home persons depend on Medicaid. It seems like the Congress is living in a bubble, and that we are the witnesses and the victims of this finance market capitalism.
Indeed. And it seems like we're not doing nearly enough in nearly enough time.
Right.
And I'm certainly not the one who's going to wake everybody up. Oh, speaking of wake, there's a really amazing film I saw last Wednesday called Awake about the Standing Rock Uprising. New film by Josh Fox. Just thought I'd get that out there since I thought of it. But anyway, thank you for calling. We've got a couple people on deck, Leslie and then Dougie.
Well, check out Time on Our Side.
Okay, Time on Our Side. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And let's go to our next caller. Leslie and Dougie is on deck.
Hello, good morning. Hi. I wanted to talk about a previous comment with someone saying, well, they're only going to live until they're about 70 years old, and what happens after them really isn't, you know, their problem. That's a pretty incredible remark. That's like...
Well, he didn't actually say the second part of it, but I guess it was sort of implied is what you're saying.
That's like the entire root of the catastrophe we're facing, that attitude. I'm living 70 years old. I'm living till I'm 70. Whatever happens after me, screw it. It's not my problem. This person really needs to check out the Children's Trust lawsuit, where a group of children are suing the federal government because it hasn't taken the appropriate action to protect them and to protect their lives and to protect their future and to protect their children. Particularly if someone's a teacher, I think that you would kind of want to care what happens to them even after you're dead, what would want to happen to your students, instead of just thinking this is all about me and my life and everything else is an illusion. That's really messed up.
I hear you. I tended to react somewhat. I'm not sure he was exactly saying that. We didn't really get to explore that. But I think
I would have.
I mean, I've heard variations on this, and this is something I kind of.
And it's a pretty sick mentality that really needs to be challenged.
Well, there's another variation of that, which is sort of this cosmic ideas like, well, you know, everything's going to go on regardless. You know that the, you know, the life is going to go on in some form or whatever. And I guess that is. You know, maybe that's sort of a Buddhist way of looking at it or something.
But they don't feel like they owe anything to their children or anything to anyone else's children. It's sort of like the leftist faux progressive version of the rapture. You know, whatever happens, it's all going to be okay. We're all going to be raptured up. It's the left-wing version of that.
Yeah, I tend to share that impression of that. But, you know, we all... You know, under the pressure of what's going on, I think, you know, there is a tendency to I call it sort of fetishism. You know, we're all clutch at some sort of fetish. You know what I mean? That sort of a substitute, some sort of source of comfort, you know, because the psychic stress is so great, whether we really fully consciously acknowledge it or not. I think there's always a tendency to clutch at some sort of magical solution, some sort of obsession. I think there's a real strong, I think in the face of both, you know, sort of fascism on one hand and ecological breakdown on the other hand, I think that's the, you know, at least as a white middle-class person myself, obviously I don't suffer the more direct oppressions that other people are suffering that are much more immediate. But, you know, I think a lot of KBOO listeners are certainly share my general demographic. And so I think, do you get what I'm saying about the fetishism?
Yes, I do. And the second part of the comments about, well, taking care of oneself and, you know, eating a great nutritious diet. Yeah, I do that too. But even that, you hit a wall. If everything is doused with glyphosate, and even organic food contains traces of it, and your water isn't, your water has lead in it, and if this administration is rolling back all food regulations, so even organic food can be contaminated, you can hit a wall. In terms of, there's only so much you can do to protect yourself. There has to be collective and group action. Just going into your own little bubble and eating organic and taking vitamins won't cut it anymore. If the Pacific Northwest is burning, you know, your air isn't any cleaner than anyone else's. We're all being hit by it.
Well, that first caller did certainly spark a lot of responses. I hope he's still listening. If he feels like he's been somewhat misunderstood, then it would be good if he would not call back this program, but another opportunity to engage. I thank you for calling, Leslie.
Okay.
And I tend to get off on these sort of big subjects. I know that there's people who did lock down two separate occasions to stop oil trains up in Vancouver, Bakken oil coming from the Bakken oil fields that people were fighting against with the Dakota Access Pipeline. That oil is still flowing in various ways, also through the Pacific Northwest on trains, and there's still a proposed oil export terminal on the Columbia River that people are fighting. I don't know if people heard about that. I don't have much more specifics. I know there's a website, I believe it's called Shut It Down. Maybe somebody can call in with that information. I should have had that more. But so there's still people doing direct action of many kinds. I talked about the two incredible women who did a large-scale sabotage of the Dakota Access Pipeline before oil was flowing through it, and are now facing serious penalties. In the face of it all, people do continue to do singular and collective actions, and I certainly encourage it. I would like to be more a part of it. I hope to see more of it happening. Let's go to our next caller. Dougie, you're on the air.
Hey, can you hear me?
Uh-huh.
Yep. Zach De La Roche from Rage Against the Machine, I can't remember the exact song, but he said, if ignorance is bliss, then knock the smile off my face. And the first caller, I wasn't going to call in, and was that a setup to get us to call in?
No, I feel bad for him now because I think he was coming from a genuine place. I don't think he deserves to be completely shot down. But go ahead.
Well, what I basically want to say is that I'm the complete opposite. I feel a strong level of anxiety because we're dealing with a fascist right now as president, and he has a white supremacist right next to him, Stephen Bannon. And the future for our young people is not looking good. Number one, because, it's been said that it's our generation that is really the first generation that is seriously dealing with the impact of climate change right now. And we're probably going to be the last generation.
You're getting a little fuzzy. There, you were getting a little fuzzy there. I don't know what was going on.
Okay. Well, I was just saying that we're the first generation that's actually living through the effects of climate change. And we're going to be the last generation that's going to be able to take any type of action to get us off of the trajectory that we're on. And I'm sure you've seen Do the Math from Bill McKibben years ago. And I just suggest people check it out because I don't have a comfortable feeling knowing that the oil industry, the fossil fuel industry,
has enough oil reserves to warm the planet 5 degrees Celsius by the end of the century. That's 10, 11 degrees Fahrenheit. Even before we get to that point, we're going to be looking at more droughts, more famines, more extreme weather events, superstorms. There's a great YouTube channel. It's called Climate and Extreme Weather News. I suggest everybody check it out. It comes out at least two times a week. Subscribe to it, and you can see the devastation that's going on around the world. I mean, this is stuff. Climate change is not something that's futuristic, and it's going to happen in the future. These things are happening now.
Well, we can see it right around us. We can feel it. It's true.
If we don't take serious action, if we don't have, as Bernie Sanders described, a political revolution to change the course that we're on, we may not have time to reverse the damage, the ecological damage. Now we're in the sixth mass extinction. You know, 25 to 50% of all species on Earth are expected, if we can continue on, that will be gone. The coral reefs are dying. Wildfires burning everywhere. I just don't feel as comfortable as your first caller, and I don't think none of us need to fall into that type of complacency. I'm hoping that that we can have the political revolution and push through the voter suppression and stuff that we're dealing with to right this course and get rid of these right-wing extremists. Your thoughts?
All right. Well, thank you so much. You're getting a little fuzzy there, so maybe we should go on to another call.
Love the show.
Okay, thank you so much. Climate Extreme Weather News, I've checked that out some. There's just so much. I mean, again, there's the empirical observations and data information is not lacking as to what's going on. The challenge, again, is to actually, I myself have fallen into the idea of the same kind of thing that Alan Nairn. I've been joking around grimly, sort of gallows humor, with like, oh, maybe the generals will have some enlightened generals who will, you know, carry out a coup. And because, you know, in the Pentagon is one of the few places that's actually seriously looking at the effects of climate change. Unfortunately, they're doing it mostly from a sort of nation state national security perspective. But it's like, oh, maybe they'll save us. You know, maybe they'll, because, you know, people talk about, when you look at it, try to look at it realistically, the only thing that makes any sense is some kind of concerted, massive, coordinated shift, deployment in research and development energies, expertise, and dollars and technologies away from massively burning fossil fuels and toward something different, away from, you know, continuing exponential economic growth, which continues regardless of everything. Energy use, everything's still going up. Fossil fuel use is going up. Regardless of what we think might be happening in terms of, you know, renewable energy. So there has to be this massive social shift. Well, it's just not happening. It's not happening because the powers that have benefited from the whole industrial control paradigm are the ones that are entrenched with the fossil fuel industry. And so they're not willing to give up their power. You know, are there a few enlightened industrialists like Elon Musk who are going differently? I frankly doubt it myself. I don't see, you know, he's talking about going to Mars, for crying out loud. So, you know, the kind of social power that it takes to change just doesn't seem to be on the horizon yet. On the other hand, what else are we going to do? So I just have this talk show, so I keep talking about it. I'll shut up and go to our next caller, who I believe is Boris. Go ahead. You're on the air.
A not so good morning to you, Paul.
Fair enough.
My lungs are on fire, and I'm wearing a mask every time I go outside, and I'm really amazed at how many people I see walking around evidently totally oblivious to the quality of the air because I can't deal with it myself.
When that started, what, about a week?
It's been going on about a week, and mm-hmm. even wearing the mask doesn't, I guess I'm getting enough pollution inside my home that when I wear the mask outside, it doesn't make a dent in the way my lungs feel.
I was wondering about that because, I don't have these problems. I mean, I felt it. There's been occasions when I have felt it myself, but I know that people have been suffering, and it's important to hear that directly.
And my lungs are healthy. I don't have any. In fact, I've always had good results from lung tests.
Generally speaking, what part of town do you live in?
Northwest.
So do you feel like is it worse where you are?
Seems to vary. It seems to vary. Some days it seems really bad, regardless of what the guy on the boob tube says about air quality. It seems really bad. Other days it seems better. So I guess it really depends on wind currents, would be my guess. Anyway, I was calling to inject a little very dark humor into the conversation in an attempt to kind of illuminate what I feel is the state of affairs. I think things are coming apart at the seams. And I guess the main reason I say that is because it really appears to me like lunatics are in control of all the levers now. I mean, absolute, unabashed lunatics. And my dark humor comes in the form of a speculation that sometime in the near future, I'm waiting for one of these freaks to suggest that nuclear engagement could be a good thing because nuclear winter could counteract the effects of global warming.
In my bleakest moments, I have such thoughts myself that, you know, maybe it's not even conscious. Maybe there's a sort of unconscious mechanism at work, you know, but maybe, yeah, there are people who even might consciously, you know, they're denying it publicly, you know, the denial of this, but, you know, these are not like quote unintelligent people who are heads of corporations. And, you know, they have to have a certain kind of, you know, at least a pragmatic intelligence to be able to do what they do. So there's more aware. I suspect there's way more awareness of the reality of global warming than people are willing to admit publicly. So yeah, maybe that thought is crossing people's mind. Maybe it's a, you know, instead of actually confronting the fact that their whole power structure is flawed and that it needs to be completely redirected and changed, seem to be unable to change in that way, then what's left is something like that. Yeah, no, I think those things myself occasionally.
Well, if you'd said something like this to me 5 years ago, even I probably would have said, well, that's kind of funny, but nobody is that detached from reality. But I have to be honest, at this point in time, my viewpoint has changed. I see these guys getting airtime that don't deserve airtime at all. They are so out of touch with everything, and they're so focused, I guess, on their own greed that they'll say things that I have to stop myself and say, did I actually hear them say that?
Yeah, it's a moment that we have difficulty coming, you know, just even coming up to speed with in any sense, let alone getting any kind of comprehensive understanding, which is why it's good to hear people like Alan Nairn, you know, some voices of sanity. So I thank
you. I have problems with Alan Nairn too, and a lot of the things he said in the past, but at any rate, it is interesting to at least highlight the fact that we're celebrating an anniversary of, again, very dark, very dark foundations. You know, that the dropping of the bomb.
Yeah, well, you know, the accumulation of not dealing with things just keeps
there,
making things get worse. And, you know, like Naren point. Was talking about, you know, getting, you know, coming to terms over the war in Korea, which we've never done.
Nope.
I mean, that's just so fundamental. And the idea that you could actually use that as an opportunity to do the kind of hard negotiations. But of course, they don't want to do that because, the Dr. Strangeloves that are in power in the inner chambers of our government.
Perfect metaphor for my dark humor.
Yeah. Anyway,
I'll get off and let somebody else have some time.
All right. Thank you so much, Boris. We've only got about 10 minutes left. This seems like when I kind of bring up these sort of open-ended subjects, it brings up a lot of callers. So I guess I should do that more often. Let's just go to our next caller.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, okay. It's funny I wasn't going to listen this morning, but I heard the first caller. And, I kind of actually do hear what he's saying because at some point you need to take a gigantic chill pill and take care of yourself because then you can't, like, strategize and come from a place of, what are we going to do next when you're having like a meltdown yourself personally? And I think I just wanted to recommend a few things. I mean, I could talk endlessly about the state of especially Japan, and I'm always, into Japan. I've lived there. I have friends from Hiroshima. I've been there. It's extremely insulting that Donald Trump didn't visit, and it's so sad that, President Obama was probably told, I'm guessing he didn't come up with the I'm not saying I'm sorry. That's a big, huge, like, they have 20 ways to say I'm sorry in Japan, and they should have brought 1,000 cranes.
Is that true? They have 20 ways to say I'm sorry?
Yeah, they really do. Huh. And the thing is Japan is so tricky because they're known for their brutality. They weren't handing out Hello Kitty stickers. And they're known for Manchuria and Unit 731. And Unit 731 is so rarely discussed. And, you know, it's tricky because, there's just so much there. They're in a meltdown. The financial crisis of 2008 hit them very hard. They have senior citizens committing crimes to get food and housing in prison. They're not doing well. And they are our key allies. And when you have people saying things like America first and whites only, you know, the Japanese are hearing this. They own a lot of our municipal bonds, by the way. And you can't, we live in a globalized society. And so what I wanted to recommend were two things that I thought, since he was an art teacher, this would be inappropriate for I'm not sure, maybe he could make a curriculum for a kindergartner out of this, but one is called Harvard Graduate School of Design. It's called GSD. And there's a Japanese artist, architect. He's very famous. His name is Toyo Ito. That's I-T-O. And it's really interesting. He talks about making different types of buildings with, different types of cooling systems, just different things. And then also, I believe his name is Miyazaki. I hope I get that right. Miyazaki is, he's the guy, he's like the godfather of anime. And he's a big, big activist in Japan right now. And I so wanted him to, if you have the opportunity to go see, he'll be on the internet in several interviews about, I just briefly saw him, I hope I get that right, Miyazaki, but he is like the godfather of anime, and he discusses he's very much an Okinawan activist, he's very much a vegan, off the grid type of guy. Which actually Japan has a very ultra-conservative side, if people don't know. You know, of course, they're famous for Mr. Copper in the London Metals Exchange. And he's just the exact opposite. And I thought that the preschool teacher would really like that as a recommendation. And, take care.
Okay, thank you so much.
Awful.
Appreciate your calling. Always always interesting. And yeah, I mean, I also felt like we perhaps dumped a little over much on our school teacher who first called. We do need to take care of ourselves. We do need to not be overwhelmed. We need to kind of start with, you know, our own health and well-being. How to balance that with the reality that we're living in is a difficult one. But let's go to our next caller. We only have a couple minutes left. Shabed, I believe. Hello? Oh, I guess he, sorry about that. I guess you got unintentionally cut off there. Let's go to Bob. You still there? Oh, I guess everybody's gone. Clean slate. 503-231-8187. I guess I should have mentioned that number more. Seems like a lot of people already know it. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. Let me just let you know what's coming up. At 9 on Political Perspectives, we'll get the latest report from Kabul when Dr. Zahir Wahab visits KBOO with the news from Afghanistan. At 10 on Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. 10:15, as always, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And 11, the Dirtbag looks at the Portland Fruit Tree Project and a master gardener answers your questions about fall gardening. And I just want to thank people I know. I've been going around town over the years that I've been doing this, past 3 years, and sometimes people recognize my voice, which is kind of disconcerting, but I have had a number of people say that they listen fairly regularly to this show. So I did want to just express my appreciation to those of you who do like what I'm doing. I know that I kind of go from interviews with specific individuals, have specific competencies and knowledge about different things, and activists, various campaigns and movements, various authors. I kind of sometimes do more open-ended discussions like the one this morning. And I hope you get something out of each one of my programs. And I am actually looking for people to get involved directly. You would have to go through our volunteer orientation process. But I'm looking to have other people involved in this show as well. And so if that's something you might be interested in, get in touch with our volunteer coordinator. Come to our volunteer orientation. It's on our website, kboo.fm, where you can also find all my previous programs. And once again, I apologize to those callers who got cut off. Looks like maybe we got somebody back on. We only got a couple minutes left there. So yeah, this is talk radio here on KBOO. We do it 5 times a week. We have lots of opportunities for people to do public affairs if you have any free time at all. There's a backlog of unedited tapes to put on the air. There's interviews to be done with people. There's news. So we'd like to get more people involved. I would like to get more people involved with this particular program. So those things are there just waiting for you. 503-231-8032 is the front desk number to get engaged, express your opinions about things you hear. Come to our committee meetings. Those are all, again, listed at our website, kboo.fm. Familiarize yourself with our website. Well, we're about out of here. I think there's someone calling. We don't really have time to get you on because we've got only a minute before our next program, and I know we've got some messages from the station to throw at you. So this is Paul Rowland with KBOO Radio, Wednesday Talk Radio. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Have you seen KBOO's Fuzzy Boo Van? It's a giant furry blue Muppet mobile that brings music and joy wherever it's found in Portland and across the region. We're having a contest this summer. If you spot the van, post a picture on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the hashtag FuzzyBoo and you'll be entered to win a chance to have FuzzyBoo at your event, as well as other prizes. Each picture you take is another chance to win. For more info and clues on where to find the van, go to kabu.fm/fuzzyboo.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Guerrillas of Desire book launch with Kevin Van Meter on Thursday, August 10th at 7:30 at Powell's on Hawthorne in Portland. Guerrillas of Desire argues that the left is wrong. The strategies are often based on the assumption that working and poor people are unorganized or simply uninterested in building a new world. Again, that's Guerrillas of Desire book launch with Kevin Van Meter on Thursday, August 10th at 7:30 at Powell's Books, 3723 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. And here's what we have coming up for you this morning on KBOO. First, on political